Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 44. My name is Karen. I'm joined by Kristen.
Hi, everyone.
We have a new setup. We decided to change how we were recording, so we're only using one mic, the better mic.
So it might sound a little different, but hopefully it's a better different.
Yeah, better different. And now Kristen and I are across from each other, staring into each other's eyes.
It's very lovely.
It's very cozy.
Yes. Cozy is a good word.
Yeah.
It's a good word. But it might really work out better, so we're hoping to kind of keep it there.
The sound looks very nice, so.
I have to not stare at the
computer. It's hard not to, right? Yeah.
It's just one of those things, you have to watch the blobs go on.
And then you can see when you, like, get really loud what it looks like
right?
and stuff.
It's like, damn, Kristen, that was way too loud. Again.
Okay, we have a good episode today talking all about Paula Santiago. I will get to more of that in a minute. Until then, you can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We are, as always, getting into our news and updates today, and there's some good stuff in here. First and foremost, Dior Goodjohn, who is playing Clarice on the show, has her Are You Afraid of the Dark Season 3 out on Nickelodeon right now. Kristen just got a look on her face. We have previously discussed you will never watch that show.
Yes, I was going to say, I'm very sorry, Dior, that I cannot watch you in Are You Afraid of the Dark, because yes, I am afraid of Are You Afraid of the Dark.
Yeah. I would like to check it out. How do you watch Nickelodeon? I never watch, like, actual cable.
We might have it on our cable, because we only have certain channels in our package. I'm pretty sure we have Nickelodeon. If we don't...
Does it go anywhere else?
There's gotta be.
Right?
That's so weird.
Yeah. I only watch streaming, really, so...
Yeah.
I forgot how to watch real TV. They are also, it seems, filming the Capture the Flag scene right now, because they're, like, on top of a mountain. All of them are decked out in gear. There's pictures of Walker in the Camp Half-Blood t-shirt.
I might have seen one. Yeah. I might have gotten a little excited.
And I saw some extras and some armor and stuff, too, and they just, it looks really cool. I mean, it's nothing, like, first of all, nothing spoilery.
No.
And nothing, like, major. It's just nice to, like, actually see it in action, because they've been filming for like 2 months now, so.
And watching Dior take the lift thing, like the sky tram or whatever, like she took a picture down the mountain as they're going up
that
to the campsite.
Kind of intense.
Yeah, like I was like, holy cow, this is so exciting. And I saw her, like, you know, you can see the trees underneath her, and I'm like, I know exactly where they're going. Like, I don't know what they're filming, but I know where they're going. And then we finally saw Walker in the shirt in some of the pictures. So I was like, I have a better idea of what they might be filming.
Yeah.
Makes me very excited.
I am very excited. I mean, that's, like, one of the biggest scenes for us to, you know, that we're really looking forward to. So.
I mean, it's one of the biggest ones in the whole series. Yeah. Like, that Capture the Flag, like, is big.
It's iconic. It's really important, obviously, for him getting claimed and everything, so
it literally starts the ball rolling.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very true. Okay, we have a lot of book news today, which is very exciting. First and foremost, we have Maze of Bones, which is the 39 Clues book number one, the one that Rick wrote, like, I think Becky said, like, 15 years ago or something. Jeez. Like that. It's been a while. I have it on my shelf. I've never read it.
Aww.
So I would like to someday. The cover reveal just came out. The cover is by award-winning Marvel cartoonist Ethan Young. It's a very cool cover. And that graphic novel comes out April 2023. I don't think I said it was the graphic novel version before, but that's what it is.
It does look very cool.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know.
It looks very catacomb-y because it's got all the skulls on the walls, so...
Yeah.
But it looks like, I like the art style, like, for a graphic novel, if I was reading a graphic novel version of this, which I would be if I bought it this week.
Yeah.
I like the style of it. It's very cool.
Yeah. Roseanne A. Brown also wants to remind you that Sura Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting is coming out very soon in September, and she just had a hilarious tweet. She says, I personally feel we should bring back Victorian-style patronage. Like, yeah, I'll accept money from reclusive widow to write my books because my, this is French, joie de vivre. Did I say that right?
Yes. Awesome. I think joie de vivre is... I think it's like joy of life.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. And talent for words reminds her of her sweet old Edmund, whom she misses so dearly. And then writes, hello, I have a book that wasn't written under the patronage of an eccentric professor looking for a bright young mind to extend his theories into the next generation, but it is coming out from Rick Riordan's imprint, and it's Buffy Meets Mean Girls, which I think is a great...
I mean,
I would pick up a book, like, even if it wasn't her, I would probably pick up a book that was described as that anyway.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
It would be intriguing enough, definitely. Yeah. I'd read the back cover and decisions.
And she got her second starred review on that book and her 10th career star overall.
Wow.
So, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I hope she's feeling very proud of herself right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to jump forward a little bit because I want to do the Paola stuff last. But we also got a new blog post from Rick this week. And it's a little bit of a book roundup. So not too much stuff that we haven't already told you guys. This is the August 6th, 2022 blog. And basically he goes through, like, Paola's coming out, Lord of Night, and Last Fallen Moon came out, and, like, you know, all the stuff that we've been keeping up to date on. I did also want to mention that Fractured Path by J.C. Cervantes is coming out. That is not a Rick Riordan Presents book, but it is a Disney book. I want to say it's, like, fairy tales, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, that would make some sense.
Yeah, so... we talked about that, like, a couple of months ago, and it sounds very good, so
yeah.
I'm very excited about that one. But the stuff that I really wanted to touch on was, he said, in other news, we should be able to announce more information soon about the Nico and Will adventure, co-written by Marcus Shiro and me, title cover, perhaps even tour plans. Mm-hmm. I saw an early draft of the cover art yesterday for the first time, and I may have screamed in happiness on the airplane. Oh, I wish I could have been on that airplane. I can't wait to share this adventure with you all. While you're waiting, you should really pick up some of Mark's other books. You will be glad you did. And Mark's put out quite a few books in the last, like, few months, let alone the last year, so go look up Marcus Shiro. They write some really interesting books, and the one that they described coming up sounds really awesome. The cover was just revealed. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, I remember
yeah.
Seeing the cover. Yeah.
Because it has mushrooms on it, and I was very excited.
Oh, yeah.
Rick also writes, I am also working on another book project. Hardly a surprise. I am always working on a book. But I wanted to reassure you all that as busy as I am with the TV film stuff, I'm still sticking with my first job of writing novels. More news on that front soonish. Whoa. So hopefully this is the Irish mythology series that he's...
That would be my guess, unless something kind of nudged its way in there and said, write me. And Rick was like, all right, fine.
Yeah, but if I was a betting woman,
yeah,
I would probably say Irish mythology. So. Yeah,
so that'll be exciting.
Yeah, that is very exciting.
So it sounds like we've got news coming very soon.
Yes, on a lot of different fronts. And
yeah.
There's just like, there's a lot just going on everywhere, and it makes me so happy, not only because I live for this stuff, you know, with this entire world, but like... I keep thinking about all the things that we can do with the podcast, and, like, I don't think we're ever going to run out of anything to talk about.
I was going to say, I don't think we've gotten any idea of when they're planning to release the Nico and Will book. I mean, we don't even have a title, so...
Just next year, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm very intrigued that... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So maybe it'll come earlier next year. Well, because Rick usually, like, releases a book a year. Like, that's always been his thing. And granted, he's been very busy with the Dinner Rather Than Later next year.
Yeah.
If it's already in production and they're already starting to print it and stuff, like, it just gets me excited because it's like, it's that much closer.
And I think we're going to eat that book up. So
I do think
everybody is. Yeah. I'm very excited. Okay, so I want to talk about Paola Santiago because that is the theme of our episode, and we do have some news stuff going on here. So first and foremost, I said that three times already. It must be the phrase of the day.
Yeah.
First and foremost. Paula Santiago and the Sanctuary of Shadows is now officially out in the world. That is the third and final book in the Paula Santiago series. And just a reminder, we're also getting a Paula Santiago TV series from Eva Longoria and Disney Studios. So that is very exciting. Mm-hmm. I would love that show because now that you've read the first book, you can see it's a little dark, a little spooky, but still like fun and yeah. full of like magic and folklore and that sort of thing. So
honestly, reading the book, I had a few like trying to visualize, you know, some of the creatures and things like that. Mm-hmm. It kind of gave me like Coco vibes.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's just fair. With how vibrant I think the world within a world is going to be and like all yeah. of that. Like, I couldn't help but think of the you know, the creatures and things that we saw in Coco. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really interested to see what it looks like on the screen.
Yeah, me too, for sure. And if Eva Longoria is involved, then I think it's going to be...
That does give it a little... It gives you a little more hope.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a really faithful adaptation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And one that uplifts the stories that are already being told. Taylor tweeted out about the end of the book series, and I just really wanted to put, like, read out what she said about this because it really touched me. I thought it was really beautiful. She goes, "It's Sanctuary of Shadows Day, and that means the Paula Santiago trilogy is complete at last. It's hard to explain what the series has meant to me, even after 5 years exploring Paula's world. These books brought me through a major transition in my life. They've helped me deepen my connection to my culture's folklore in ways I couldn't have imagined at the start. They've connected me to the Percyverse and the incredibly loyal, kind, and enthusiastic fans of Rick Riordan's work."
That's us.
Hey. "They've been my companions through joys and sorrows, triumphs and disappointments. They supported my family through years of an ongoing pandemic. I could go on and on, but suffice it to say the series has and will always have my whole heart. I'm so grateful to everyone who has been on this journey with me. I hope you find this third volume a worthy conclusion to the world we've been sharing these past years. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for changing my life."
Aww.
That's so cute.
That is very sweet.
Yeah. Hmm. I just really enjoyed that, and I think that she's cool, and
yeah,
it made me happy. Yeah. I don't have anything more to say about that. Okay, so Reed Riordan also put out a couple of articles from this past week, and both of them were about Paula Santiago. So I think this is like five articles around the Paula Santiago Sanctuary of Shadows. The first one here is Abuela's Guide to Arma del Almas, which is cool, and if you've read the book, you know what those are, so I'm not gonna go into that too much. But the one I really wanted to talk about was, which Paula Santiago character are you? I love doing quizzes together.
Yes, I think it's you do.
A lot of fun. All right, we are going to take this quiz together and see if we end up with the same person.
I was going to say, and you'll have to tell me if it's someone I haven't met yet.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was worried about. I kind of hope that's like more of the main characters, but
yeah, we'll
see
find out
what happens. Okay. How would your friends describe you? Oh, we could do this for each other.
Oh, boy.
The smart one, the athletic one, the compassionate one, the funny one, the outspoken one, the easygoing one, the one nobody messes with. Friends? Question mark.
Rude.
Do we want to do this for each other or for ourselves?
I don't know.
Do you trust me?
I don't know.
I would say you would either be the compassionate one or the smart one.
Okay.
That's how I would feel. I'd probably lean toward compassionate because you're like one of the nicest yeah. people I know.
Also, so many people are smarter than me.
Yeah.
Let's see. For Karen, I would probably say, why is this not easy? Like, I want it to just be easy.
The pressure is on.
And be like, this one. Because, like, I kind of like the outspoken one for you.
Really?
It's not like you shout at the top of your lungs about everything all the time. Yeah. But, like, when you really care about something, you don't hold back. So, like, outspoken kind of jumps out at me.
I don't hate that.
Okay.
I'll choose that one.
All right, I'll take compassionate one.
Okay.
I think that's fitting.
Oh, and you got to scroll. Okay, I was waiting for it to like change.
Same here. Because
the other ones changed.
I think
yeah.
so too. Yeah.
Okay. Pick a summer activity, rest and relaxation, host a backyard barbecue, visit theme parks, volunteer my time, explore an unknown area, take a road trip, destroy my enemies, stay inside and prepare for the fall. stay inside and prepare for
that
the fall.
That one was easy. I knew you would do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say rest and relaxation because ideally my entire summer would be spent on a beach with fruity beverages and books in my...
Yeah.
And then watching movies at night. Preferably while floating in a pool floaty and have the big screen in front of me.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
That would be my second choice.
Right. So I'm going to say rest.
Based on these two, I have a feeling who I'm going to get already and I'm not going to be mad about it. Okay.
It's good.
Choose a monster hunting weapon. Dagger, spear, club, slipper, whatever I can find, iPhone. Why would I want to hunt monsters? I don't need a weapon.
I want to say my iPhone. Because it would be like, call someone else.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I got caught up in monster hunting, but someone help me.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to die.
So, I want to say dagger, but that requires getting very close to your enemies. So, I think for my own safety, I'm going to say spear.
Okay, see, I like that neither one of us are like, why would I want to hunt monsters? Because we understand that sometimes you don't get a choice. If you've read Rick's books, you don't get a choice sometimes. The monsters find you. So I appreciate that we understand that about the world. I'm saying iPhone.
That's great. I like that.
I can also throw it at people, but it might not do as much damage as I want it to.
Pick a genre of music. Pop, rap, emo, dance, jazz, heroic epic orchestral music, salsa. I prefer peace and quiet.
I mean, my go-to would be pop.
Yeah.
Because I just like it. It's high energy and friendly and happy and sometimes sad, but good.
Yeah.
But I do love some heroic, epic orchestral music.
Yeah.
There's nothing better in a movie than, like, the hero tune, like, popping up. Like, the Avengers score. When the Avengers music comes on, you're like, oh, yeah, stuff's coming. All right, all right. Like, you can't, yeah. It just, yeah. I'll probably go with pop, but I kind of want to go with heroic epic orchestral music.
I don't know. Should I pick rap or emo? I usually pick rap, I feel like, but I've been feeling real emo lately.
I was going to say, emo as a music genre kind of gives me the giggles, because it's basically like punk.
Punk, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, why are we calling it emo?
Because a lot of them are very emo.
It's true. Yeah. It's very true. Which are you listening to lately? Like, I think if people were asked what kind of music you listen to in general, people would say rap, because you've kind of set yourself apart as the Eminem superfan. But tastes change over time, I'm more into the, like...
I've been really wanting to pull out my Good Charlotte CD.
So go with emo. Okay. If it's where your heart is taking you.
Yes, it is. What keeps you up at night? This is a good one. My self-doubts, my God.
I didn't know they were coming for me.
Yeah, very bad word almost came out of my mouth. My self-doubts, my regrets, stress from work, the world's injustices, too much coffee, also fair, my snoring roommates, noisy neighbors, ghosts and monsters. You know what? I gotta go with my self-doubts. Like, there's a few on here that would apply, but, like, literally my self-doubts do keep me up at night.
I mean, doesn't everyone at some point... I'm pretty sure. I'm considering stress from work. Not that my work is particularly stressful, but I'm including all of my other pursuits and things under stress from work. And the number of times in a night that I look at the clock and go, okay, if I go to bed right now, I'll get 4 hours and 28 minutes of sleep. That'll get me through, but I have to fall asleep right now. And then I sit there and stare at the clock.
Yeah.
Or I play another game on my phone. Or I watch another TikTok and then check the clock and then recalculate. And I'm like, I'm never going to have enough time to get this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and this done. So I'm going to say stress from work.
Yeah, I feel like
it's not really stress from work, but it's basically the same concept.
Pick a secret hideout. Stately mansion, isolated farmhouse, open-air desert compound. I almost said dessert compound, which would be very different and also preferable.
Tasty.
Abandoned warehouse, underground armory, scientific research center, giant palace, anywhere with air conditioning. You know what? Right now I'm feeling that air conditioning.
Man, it's hot here.
A secret hideout? I'm going to go with stately mansion. I feel like that's just my aesthetic.
I mean, if I'm picking a hideout...
Mine's not very inconspicuous.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. If I was picking, like, a place I wanted to stay forever, I would pick something more like a stately mansion or a giant palace if I had my choice. But, like, for a hideout, I mean, I do like air conditioning. Yeah. But my abandoned warehouse can have air conditioning.
That's true.
So I'm gonna...
Really? Abandoned warehouse?
Well, you make it your own. You, like... It's really cool when you find, like, the little loft area in the, on, like, the floor, and then you go up into the loft area, and you build it up all cool, and you use graffiti to make it look badass. That's how you do okay. a secret hideout.
Okay, you're right.
And it has air conditioning, I decided.
Yeah, okay. What's your greatest weakness? Oh, God, here we are, confessing on the internet again. I don't always listen. I'm easily manipulated. I have a huge ego. I'm prone to falling into a rage. I have low self-esteem. I'm judgmental. I'm insensitive. I get scared easily.
Wow.
Man.
Ouch, Reed Riordan. Making me do some real introspection here. I wasn't expecting this out of a quiz to find out which Paola character I am.
I'm either easily manipulated, because I am so gullible.
Yeah.
Or I have low self-esteem, which I'm working on, okay? Didn't mean to get defensive there.
I mean...
My biggest weak... Alright, I'm going with I have low self-esteem, because that probably is worse than being gullible.
This might be a little bit of a surprise.
Okay.
I kind of want to go with I'm judgmental.
Really? After I just said you are the nicest person I know.
Well, I'm judgmental of myself and of others, but in my head. Like, and I scold myself in my head for being judgmental. I'm like, you evil, like, you know, crone. How dare you think that about that person standing in front of you? You don't know what they're going through. Like, I do. I yell at myself in my head. So I feel like I can be judgmental, but I'm also working on it with my other self. There are not two of me. So I'm going to go with I'm judgmental.
Okay. That is a little bit of a surprise. Mm-hmm. What's your best school subject? Math, history, science, English, PE, art. I excel in all subjects. I hate school. Don't make me think about it.
It's definitely not math.
Yeah.
Art include choir?
Probably. I would allow that.
Because it's either English or choir. Because, like, choir, of course, it's easy. You show up, you do your thing. Yeah. But it was also my favorite.
Yeah.
But English was my best, like, subject.
Is it conceited for me to say I excel in all subjects? Because I did really well in school.
Yeah, so did I, yeah. I think I'm going to go with English.
Okay.
Choir just, again, it makes me sound like an idiot.
Yeah.
I'll stick with English.
Okay. I'm gonna be a smarty pants and say I excel in all subjects. All right. Which supernatural creature would you choose as a pet? Kadejo? Oh, God. I don't know if I know what all of these are. Lechuza? Chupacabra? Dwayne DeCillo? Skeletal Warrior? Ghost Kitty? Don't Need One? Shadow Clone? I'm sorry if I butchered those.
The Lechuza are the witches from Paola. Like, the trio she saw in the first book. Because I just looked that up. Because I couldn't remember what Lechuza was. And Dwayne DeCillo comes in the next book, I believe.
Okay.
Because it was on the wiki, and I remember looking it up and going, nope, something I don't have to worry about yet.
Kadejo is a supernatural spirit, dog-shaped.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Did you say Dwayne DeCillo? Dwayne?
I think that's from Forest of Nightmares, so I don't think I've met it yet.
Okay. Oh, yeah, they're like the little, like, elf, not quite elf sort of things, but yeah, you're right. Well, I mean, it doesn't matter, because I'm going with Chupacabra, obviously.
I mean, that's the one...
Ghost Kitty...
Right? Like, Chupacabra is obvious because we're going to talk about Bruto, but I don't want a Lechuza.
I'm going with Chupacabra.
Do I want a Chupacabra or should I get a Ghost Kitty?
I got my result. It was not who I thought it was going to be.
I think I'm going to go with Ghost Kitty.
Okay.
Because that would be fun.
Who did you get?
It can follow me around. I'm Emma.
I thought I was going to be Emma. What does it say?
You're probably not that great in a fight. True. But you're the best support that a monster hunting hero can ask for. You have a huge heart and are willing to sacrifice so much for your friends, but sometimes you have a hard time telling the difference between what your friends want and what they really need.
Okay.
I can take it.
Okay.
That sounds not inaccurate.
Yeah. I'm Paola. You're logical and rational, even in the face of the mysterious and unknowable. You care deeply for your friends and family, even if you don't always show it. You're a bit hard on yourself, and you carry way too much on your shoulders. Okay, Reed Riordan.
God, she really came for us today.
Okay, I really thought I was going to be Emma, because she loves fall and the first question, too. The outspoken one, because she's so, like...
True.
For the rights of everyone. Yeah.
I'm good with Emma. I like purple nail polish.
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
That was a good time.
Yeah. So, I think we should talk about Paola Santiago and the River of Tears by Taylor K. Mejia now.
Yeah, I think it's about that time.
Yeah. We're also going to try to have a chat with Taylor this week as well and talk about Sanctuary of Shadows coming out and just getting her thoughts on a whole bunch of other stuff. You guys know how our interviews work at this point. We've done quite a few, so... That's all very exciting. I also wanted to point out, I did review River of Tears back in 2020 for Hypeable. I labeled it, the headline is Spooky Good Fun, which I think definitely applies to this. So I'll link to that if you guys are interested. But Kristen is going to lead us through the book right now because you just finished reading it. And what are your first thoughts on it? What'd you think?
Well, again, want to point out, like the last couple of times, I listened to the audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
So pardon me if I stumble over some words. I know what they sound like, but I have no idea what they look like. So seeing some of these words for the first time, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I actually started listening to Sanctuary of Shadows in audiobook form as well. And the narrator's really good.
Yeah, I really liked the narrator.
Really, really
liked her. I don't know if it's the same one. I kind of assume it is.
I would think so.
But the narrator was really good for River of Tears. I quite enjoyed listening to, like, the appropriate pronunciations, I think, for a lot of things.
And I really, like, her different voices for all of the characters are really distinctive, like Emma's versus Paola's. I really liked that.
Yeah, no, I agree. As far as my thoughts on Paola and the River of Tears, I really liked it. I like the interpersonal stuff between her and her mom. Like, I liked that took a little longer than it does in some books.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause sometimes, especially, like, with middle grade stuff, they'll give you a brief introduction to it, and then you, like, jump right in. Like, I mean, kind of like Percy. Like, we meet Sally, but we don't really get to spend a lot of time with Sally at the beginning there. We jump right into monsters and everything else. So,
she also
gets
kidnapped, so.
Right, which also causes problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really did appreciate that the beginning of this book took a little while to, you know, to get into the mystery of where these kids are and what's happening. And, yeah, so I appreciate that. I had a little trouble once they got into the desert.
Yeah, the desert.
It just gets kind of long, and it is supposed to feel long.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't necessarily think it's a mistake, but I had a little bit of problem there just kind of staying attentive and really sticking with it. But, of course, by the end, I was into it and really excited about how it was going to wrap up. So, I really did like Paola. Had a few issues there, but, again, I think it was kind of purposeful that it gets a little...
Two things really stick out to me about this series. One is the folklore and the stories and, like, the spookiness of it, because, like, some of these stories are pretty dark, and I think that she does a really good job of bringing them to life and making them, like, spooky scary without making them terrifying, which they easily could be. There's a lot of horror movies and stuff based on the characters, like La Llorona and all of that, so... I just like the whole vibe of the book. But also Paola, I really liked how, like, scientific she was, and then how she had to accept that magic was real and that maybe her mom wasn't, like, completely cuckoo.
Yeah.
And just her as a character, because she's sort of like, she reminds me a lot of Aru Shah, because she's a little bit of a troublemaker, a little bit of, like, can't quite always stay in line. I think Percy, what happens to him is a lot of, like, outside influence. It's not necessarily him being bad. It's just the fact that, like, monsters exist in his world and he gets into trouble because of that. Whereas Aru Shah and Paola are a little bit similar in that their personalities kind of make it a little bit difficult for them to kind of stay on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
And I actually really love that in characters, and especially, like, young girl characters, so.
Yeah. So, okay, so let's jump into the general plot. This was my very quick summation of basically the first three chapters or so. Because I don't want to get into the spoiler stuff, and everything is a spoiler. Yeah. So, Paula Santiago lives her life digging deep into the wonders of the scientific world and paying as little attention to her mother's supernatural beliefs as possible. When one of her best friends, Emma, goes missing, she's willing to do whatever she can to find her, including steering herself and her other best friend, Dante, into a world full of supernatural craziness she couldn't begin to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that's really just, like, the opening of the book, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. Okay, so we're gonna dive into our characters. I think, first and foremost, we should probably talk about Paula.
Yeah, probably. And this is all spoiler-free, as usual.
Yes.
We'll get to the spoiler section later. We'll tell you when that's gonna happen.
You will not be surprised.
Yes. Or maybe you will be, if you weren't paying attention. Pay attention!
Okay, ma'am. All right, so we're going to start with Paula Santiago, our main character. She's 12 years old and resides in Silver Springs, Arizona, near the Gila River, which I had to look up, and I think it might be Gila now that I'm saying that.
Oh, okay.
It's the Gila. You know, she pronounced it the Gila the entire time, and I looked it up and went, I don't remember hearing Gila River. I'm
like
so
Gila
white.
Monsters, right? Like that's
well, it's the pronunciation. You don't pronounce the G.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
yeah,
Gila, but which also, is why that
yeah,
makes so much
that
sense.
That confused me too because there's like a lizard called a Gila monster.
Oh yeah,
and it's also spelled with a G. And I was confused.
And people pronounce it Gila monster all the time.
Well, I've only ever heard Gila monster, and then I saw it, and I was like, I don't know what that is because my brain wasn't putting. I went through the same thing you just did. Yeah.
Okay. So it's definitely the Gila River.
Yeah.
Which, again, so much more sense. I listened to a woman pronounce it for me in, you know, the audiobook for how many chapters?
Yeah.
And I just took it for granted that I would know what it looked like when I saw it, and I didn't. And, yeah. Anyway, she is friend to Dante and Emma. She's also a neighbor of Dante's, which we, of course, will get into in a bit. She firmly believes in science data and what can be proved. Honestly, I think this was one of the most interesting parts about things about her. Because, like, she wasn't just, like, a student with a general interest in science or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's, like, doing her own experiments and reading up and researching special things all the time. Like, she's super interested in getting a dog. So she's been researching dog breeds and figuring out which one would be best for them to have and which one she'd most like to have.
Yeah.
And I really love that about her. I think there definitely, I was not one of them, but there definitely are children like that in the world. And I feel like that's kind of an untapped market of children.
Like, I think it is too.
Like, we get the quote unquote nerdy characters in, you know, in books and TV and movies and stuff, but they never seem to, like, really take on stuff like that. Like, for some reason, Paula just really stands out as being, like, a really three-dimensional version of what a science-based, you know, science-obsessed kid would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that about her.
Yeah. I do also think that you don't see it a lot with young girls, especially.
That too.
Yeah. But that very scientific, not just nerdy, but, like, actual science and experimentation, I think you're right, is a completely untapped kind of area. And so interesting to put that in line with all of the monsters that she ends up coming up against. And, like, she, in this book, her entire worldview changes. Like, she's really tipped upside down because of everything that happens to her. And to watch her finally accept that, not only accept it, but embrace it, especially in the later books, I find, like, really fascinating and really well done.
Yeah, and, like, I've obviously only read the first book, which she doesn't really have a lot of time at the end of the book to really reflect on how much of it she truly believes. You know, like, she obviously just experienced it all, so she has to believe in it now. But, like, I don't know yet how much it's changed her worldview, so I'm glad to hear that it does.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to reading her accepting the supernatural, but also kind of fitting it into her scientific-based reality. Because a lot of people think that if you believe in, like, extraterrestrial things or in supernatural things, that it means that you're a kook and that you don't understand how science works and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it can kind of be the opposite, where it just keeps you grounded. It keeps you looking at how the supernatural interacts with our world, kind of seeing how we can measure, you know, supernatural presence of things. And, you know, like, I have a little bit of respect for, like, ghost hunters, like, actual ghost hunters, as opposed to people who just do it for TV or whatever. Yeah. And some of them are legit and some of them aren't. But, like, I really think that's an interesting, they would call it pseudoscience, where, you know, you're trying to actually identify if this is a thing that exists in the world. And it's really hard to identify something you can't see, you can't, you know, you can maybe hear it, but, you know. So I'm really interested to see how Paola kind of wraps all of that under her umbrella.
Yeah. I love stories that combine science fiction and fantasy and, like, blurs those lines a little bit, because I love both of those genres a lot, and I love that phrase that's like, magic is science we don't understand yet.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times it does kind of feel that way. If you don't understand something, it's like, wow, this feels like magic. And sometimes when you do finally understand it, it takes a little bit of the magic out of it. But in, you know, alternate worlds like this, in fantasy genres and everything, when you can actually combine the two, I love that. I think Yunha Lee does that really well in his books, because it's they're sci-fi books, but then you also take elements of folklore, so that's so interesting.
Agreed, very much agreed, yeah. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up Paola's basic traits. We'll jump on down to Dante now. Dante Mata, he's neighbor to Paola and friend to both Paola and Emma, as we've heard before. He is a new member of the school soccer team, and I think we learn more about this from Paola than we do Dante.
Yeah.
Because Paola is a little jealous of the time that he wants to spend with his soccer friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard growing up. He's also a little bit skeptical of things, but he's less skeptical than Paola. I think he has a little more belief in some of the supernatural, but is also, you know, in a general sense, kind of like, are we sure? Are we sure we believe in this?
Yeah.
Are we sure that this is, you know, he's not really like, it doesn't exist and whatever, but he's more of a, I'm on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really do appreciate from him. Because he kind of is the perfect balance to Paola's, like, staunch belief that it doesn't exist, and then his grandmother and her mother's belief that, like, everything exists.
Mm-hmm.
So he does a really good job of kind of, you know, being friend to Paola, even when she's reciting facts about things and she's driving him nuts.
Yeah.
You know, he still kind of understands why she thinks the way she does.
I think that this book did a really good job with that middle school boy-girl relationship dynamic where you're just starting to realize, oh, am I like, do I like you?
Like, versus, he's not just a boy, he's a boy.
Yeah, and but also, like, all the history that they have as friends, and kind of growing up and growing apart from each other, and what that means. And I won't spoil anything down the line, but, like, there's a lot to come in terms of their dynamic, and then the three of them together, their dynamic together. So, again, I think Taylor really captures that, like, middle school uncertainty between friends and what it means in growing up and everything. And then with everything else going on top of that, it's just like, how does Paola just, like,
right,
you know, sift through everything? And it's a lot to handle.
Oh, yeah. Definitely agree. Okay, so that's basically a bit about Dante. We'll move on to his grandmother, because I kind of fought whether to include her or not, because I didn't include Paola's mom on this list.
Right, okay.
Mostly because we don't know a ton about her yet in the first book. We basically get Paola's version of her.
Yeah.
And you can kind of guess Paola's version of her own mother.
I would very much say that Paola's mom is kind of only there to be that little bit of friction for Paola, and to be the one who talks about supernatural. And, like, we didn't really talk about this, but Paola's relationship with the folklore and the legends of, like, her people and stuff like that, her culture, she's not, like, down with it.
Right.
But her mom is very much steeped into that culture, and I think that she kind of exists, at least in this first book, to be that almost antagonist for Paola, to be her opposite. So I can kind of understand that. Versus, like, Abuela, I feel like she has a little bit more of a role, especially later on, especially near the end of the book.
Yeah.
And she kind of, she's a way more mysterious character, too, because you don't totally understand what's going on with her.
Yeah, for sure. After having read the book and knowing the ending, it's hard not to include her as a character.
Yeah.
You know, it, from the beginning, we know her as Dante's abuela, who he lives with, spends a lot of time with, you know. And basically, the only other fact I have is that she's the owner of the Shankla, which is very important. And we'll get to it later. But she's a little more, like, on the strict side. Like, Paula seems to be respectful of her, but kind of afraid of her.
Yeah, she's... And I feel like that's very normal for, like, you know...
Especially a grandmother.
Yeah, like, you just have a lot of respect for somebody who's older, who's seen a lot, who's taking care of Dante, who's kind of taking care of Paula in a way, too. Like, their whole dynamic is very close, so... Yeah,
especially, like, we read in the book that Paula spends nights, or used to spend nights, on the couch. Mm-hmm. You know, spend nights in Dante's room at one point, but once they got to a certain age, that had to stop.
Yeah.
So, like, she's very, you know, I would say she's very close with his abuela. Maybe not as personally as Dante, but, mm-hmm. like, you know, his grandmother's done a lot for Paula. So I think that's definitely worth noting.
Yeah.
Next up on our list is Emma Lockwood, who is friend to Paula and Dante and disappears pretty early in the book.
Yeah.
So we don't know, honestly, I don't know a lot about Emma yet, mm-hmm. but I have a feeling she's probably going to recur.
Yes.
And especially now that I am Emma.
Yes.
According to the quiz, I'm very interested to see what else we learn about Emma.
Yeah. Emma is quite an interesting character, and it's... Okay, I won't really say anything about it, but I feel like she could definitely rub people the wrong way, but I also feel like... That's kind of the point. She's just very in your face about certain things to the point where it's like, wow, maybe this is too much, but her heart is in a good place.
Yeah.
So I really like that about her. Yeah. And reading the third book, I just like everything that's going on with her right now. So
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But for now, we have a very, very limited kind of view of who right. Emma is. It's basically from Paula's perspective and what she knows about Emma and all of that.
So. Right, yeah.
Okay, we'll keep right on moving. I couldn't not include this next character.
I don't really remember this person.
The Undina?
Yeah.
She is a figure that... She's pretty prominent in this book, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there's this mysterious girl who doesn't appear to be, like, human, but also doesn't appear to be non-human. She's... kind of a ghostly figure, but she's not a ghostly figure.
Yeah.
And she features pretty prominently in Paula's dreams.
Yeah, you're right. I just totally forgot about her.
Like, I think at first it's mostly, like, a voice that Paula kind of associates her with, and then eventually she starts seeing her in her dreams. And as we know, Paula's dreams in the first book kind of become more and more, like, realistic as she dives deeper and deeper into the legends mm-hmm. and things. So, yeah, Undina is kind of a big... character for this book. I won't say anything more. I wanted to throw this term in there because we heard it so much in the audiobook, Awagata. She's Awagata-like, but is not entirely. Like, even Paula, through her dreams, once she knows what an Awagata is, she's not like, oh, that's what Undina is. She kind of feels like there's something more to her than just an Awagata. So, I wanted to throw that in there. Okay, next up, we're getting towards some of the characters we don't know a lot about in this book. I have a feeling we're going to get more of them in the future. But in this book, Marisa Martinez is a missing girl who is believed to have drowned in the river. I think it's, like, somewhere between a year and 3 years prior. Because she was a classmate of Paula's. They didn't really get along. But she has since disappeared and kind of become a community, like, figure where they all kind of think of Marisa and they're like, oh, that poor girl, you know.
And that was, like, kind of, you know, don't go near the river. Like, that was, like, a major reason.
Absolutely. And Paula's like, yeah, but she was also mean.
Yeah.
And I didn't really like her, so it's kind of hard. Okay, next up is Naomi, who we don't meet until about halfway through the book, but she feels like a character we're probably going to keep track of. She is one of the Niños de la Luz and is silver-haired, which is not fully explained, mm-hmm. but... considering what happens to Paula with her hair throughout the book, I think we have a good idea of why she's silver-haired.
Mm-hmm. And Taylor got Naomi in her quiz, so and she was very happy about that. So
that says a lot.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool. Last on my list is Bruto.
Yeah.
You can't not include Bruto.
He's so cute.
He doesn't show up until, like, the last quarter of the book. But I know exactly why we can't. You have to include Bruto.
Yeah, it's so hard not to just instantly fall in love with him. Like, I'm a sucker for, like, the pet characters.
The sidekicks. Yeah. No, for sure. And Bruto is a chupacabra puppy.
Yeah.
That Paola meets throughout her adventure. And takes kind of under her wing and trains him with the Starburst. She gives him the lemon Starburst. And it's so cute. So, yeah. Gotta love Bruto. And I am looking forward to seeing and learning more about Bruto
in the future. Sure.
Okay. So, that pretty much takes care of the characters. We have a good idea of who they are. And we talked a little bit about what we like about them, which is great. Now, we're going to kind of get into some of the other things. Not all... They don't really fit under a category. They're not really characters. They're not really, like, magical items or whatever. There's a little bit of everything in here. So, the first thing I figured we should probably talk about are the Arma de Almas. Mm-hmm. When I was writing up this document, thought it was Alma de Armas.
Oh, okay.
I got them switched, so I fixed it.
It's a little bit of a tongue twister anyway.
It is, yes. But we learn that the Arma de Almas very quickly, I guess, is this a spoiler? How much of
I don't think so.
Is a spoiler?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a pretty prominent thing and not like...
And we learn it fairly early, so it's not like it takes forever to figure out what this is. Okay, Dante is given by his abuela her shankla, and when she hands it to him, it's like her shankla, and then pretty soon after, it transforms into Dante's shankla. Like, it doesn't transform into something else yet. It stays looking very much like a slipper, and I kind of love that. But sooner than later, it magically transforms into his weapon.
Yeah.
The weapon that he needs. I don't even know how it chooses, like, what to be, but it's his club.
I think it's, like, meant to be, like, representative of, like, you,
that
possibly.
Was kind of what I thought, yeah.
So you have, like, a very commonplace item, like a chancla, and it turns into a weapon when you need it. And you had a very good point that I did not think of.
It just kind of came to me, again, while I was putting together the doc, I was like, oh, wait. So would Riptide kind of be Percy's?
I mean, yeah. I feel like it would be.
I mean, it's not necessarily a commonplace object that is magicked into... It kind of is.
I mean, it's a pen. Well, it was a sword first.
Right, and that's what I mean. Like, the pen is mostly a disguise so that he can carry it all the time.
But, I mean, so is the chancla. So
it's every time I think, oh no, it doesn't really fit, the words I use to describe why it doesn't really fit make it fit.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
I think it's the same thing.
It's very, yeah. The only thing, again, I'm going to try and describe it and it's going to end up describing it into the thing. I feel like Riptide, while I think it could be the same for any of Poseidon's children that in the future would have Riptide in their pocket,
right,
it wouldn't change. Whereas with the Arma de Almas, they would. Like, I think it would change. I don't necessarily think Dante's grandmother used a club.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe, but...
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
I don't know if we find that out either. But, like, I don't necessarily think... It could have been something else, is my thought.
Yeah.
So, something
that's still really cool, though.
Right?
It kind of ties it together a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, different origins, different cultures, but, like, related.
Yeah.
So, I find that interesting.
And at least thematically related, if not anything else. So, yeah, I just thought that was a really cool concept. And I don't know if other characters in the series receive their Arma de Almas. Gonna say that wrong about sometimes. Like, I'm curious if, like, Paola has one that we don't know about yet, because in this book, she had the flashlight, which turned out to have a supernatural identity of its own, but it wasn't an Arma de Almas. It was something else. It was a magical item, but not her magical item. So I'm a little curious if she's got one kind of hanging out there in the world somewhere that she'll discover. Or, again, other characters, because when we meet Maria and Naomi, they both, like, are really... They see Dante with his, and they're like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm curious if other characters may discover them, because it's a really cool concept, and I would love to see it play out in other characters' hands and things. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to talk about was the different levels of reality in this world. Because, for me, they were a little confusing, but also very interesting. So you've got the real world, with the geography and the properties that we understand. And then, from our world, you walk into a desert, or the river, and suddenly you're in a world where where things seem to follow the basic, like, physical properties of the world, but it's actually, like, kind of another plane, and you can't leave it without, like, permission, basically. Like, you can't leave it until you're allowed to leave, basically.
It's a bit like Limbo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was so weird and interesting that it was, like, on our, like, you walk from our Earth into the desert, and suddenly, you're just not on our Earth anymore.
it's a different, like, plane of existence. And it's not like you walk through a door into another world. It's like, you kind of just are transported here randomly.
Right. And it confused me a little, but
I think it confused Paolo, too.
That's fair. But I did think it was really well done that, again, it's not a doorway. It's not something they knew they were doing. They were hoping it would take them where they wanted to go. But, and then, again, from the pseudo-world of the desert, like the other plane, and then into the rift, which we'll get into the rift later in the spoiler section, I'm sure. But, like, I just, knowing that there are these basically, like, three distinct levels of, I don't want to say consciousness, because they're actual physical places, but it was very distinct for me how once you're actually in the place, like, the actual traveling from place to place isn't necessarily distinct, but once you're there, it has very specific properties.
And very different feel.
Yeah, because, like, once Paola realized she was in the desert and wasn't able to leave, it took on characteristics of its own, like, with the light and with other things. Like, it just very distinctly became another place as opposed to just a, you know, part of her world. Yeah, they just really kind of grabbed me because of how special they were and all of that. So, see, next up on my list are the creatures or the monsters. They feel like monsters, but they're not entirely monsters.
Yeah, some of them are kind of scary.
Yeah.
But also that's just, like, who they are, like, where they come from, you know?
Yeah. I put Chupacabra first because, I mean, there's a lot of, like, scary chupacabras.
Yeah.
I think the creature that Naomi is fighting when Paola first, like, in the desert, when she first meets Naomi, I'm pretty sure that was a chupacabra. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of days and I can't remember.
Yeah, it's been, like, 3 years.
Well, because Paola didn't know what it was either. And so I think, like, at that point, she wasn't sure. She didn't say that it was, so I'm pretty sure it was, though. But we meet another chupacabra, Bruto, who is adorable. And I love that, you know, I always love when a legend on Earth becomes a magical creature in someone's story. And chupacabras are one of those legends that people, you know, talk about. It's a creature that may or may not exist in our world.
Yeah.
And
it's definitely something that, like, I think is more well-known than a lot of other...
Absolutely. Kind of like...
creatures.
Yeah. There's a lot of creatures kind of like that in our world where we kind of question whether or not they could be real. And it kind of grounds it a little bit because you're like, okay, I can at least get a general idea of what a chupacabra is. Like, I have a pretty good idea of what it looks like and that sort of thing. I have trouble visualizing an actual chupacabra.
Yeah, I just think of it as, like, a big black dog.
If you've seen
Almost like a hellhound.
Well, I was gonna say, if you've seen Onward, they have a little pet dragon. He's very skinny, and he kind of runs around their house and trips them all the time.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Like, he's a very small dragon. For some reason, that comes to mind when I think of chupacabras. Now, I know they don't look like it, but basic stature and, like, attitude, I guess, is what kind of comes to mind. And then I also, there's also an episode of Bones.
Oh, there's always an episode of Bones.
Right, in which they go to a mountainous area, I think it's in the southwest United States, and one of the owners of one of the lodges wants people to believe there is a chupacabra, so he starts, like, collecting visualizations of it, like, paintings and things that people have done, and, like, he's got them up in the lobby. So I see that, and that's what I kind of picture, but it's so hard to believe that that actually exists. But yeah, so I love how Taylor used the chupacabras in the book and how they didn't seem to be entirely evil. Like, even the first one that Paola meets with Naomi, it's fighting Naomi, but at the same time, like, kind of gets...
Isn't that also, like, its job?
Right.
Basically, to, yeah. like, protect...
Well, it was in the desert, like, doing yeah. its job, so it wasn't... Yeah. But it didn't come off as pure evil, either. It's just a creature, you know. Next on the list are the La Mano Panchona.
That's the disembodied hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an interesting sound that just came out of your mouth.
I was super creeped out during this because this is like the creepier version of a spider.
Yeah, that's fair. And don't like... I'm not going to say that because I can't remember which book that's in.
Okay. But yeah, the La Mano Panchona are disembodied hands, as we kind of said. Mm-hmm. And they just come waltzing into camp.
Yeah.
And with how powerful they are, like...
Actually, that is what I was thinking of. Like, that part was, like, really creepy.
Yeah, they're, like, dragging Dante away, yeah. and Paola's trying to come up with something, and it's freaky as heck. We also learn in this book that they are weak when it comes to fire, mm-hmm. And so thank goodness for that, because that allows the Niños yeah. to fight a lot more
that
effectively.
That whole scene was, like, really intense and really well done, I think.
Yeah, like, as it's dragging it away from the firelight, and, you know, Paola's freaking out because she knows she has to save him before they get into the darkness outside the camp borders, like... She's, yeah, it's a very, very creepy but well-done scene. If they do that for the TV show, which they have to, I'm going to be very creeped out. It's just scary. They're scary. But I really did think they were very imaginative, interesting, like, legend to bring to life. Like, I would yeah. not have picked a disembodied hand as, like, a really creepy creature, but it's a very effective, really creepy
it
creature.
Is.
So,
yeah.
I'll give that to Taylor, for sure. The next monster I had was the Lechuza, who are the witches. We didn't get a very descriptive idea of what they are. And what it was kind of a passing thing. I'm guessing that in future books we will get more glimpses of the Lechuza, because it kind of felt like maybe a setup.
Okay. I don't remember.
Okay.
But I did just Google it because I couldn't remember what it was, and this article describes it as the Mexican owl monster. Can I just show you a picture of
the yes.
cut? Just like, it's just its eyes and like a beak, but it's...
That's terrifying!
Yeah, it's really creepy.
It's really zoomed in, and it's really scary.
Yeah.
I would like to see the middle grade version of that monster, please. Like, I would like to see it drawn out with lots of colors and less terrifying.
Yeah. Oh. Google does not make it less terrifying. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to know anything about that. Ever. Nope. Nope. No interest in it. Nope.
Yeah. I'm just going to close this page now.
And never sleep again.
Yeah.
But yeah, we also had, I'm just going to skip right by it because I don't want to talk about it anymore. There were a lot of creatures that Paola saw once she got into the rift. And I don't think it's a spoiler to really talk about them because they're not important to the actual plot. But she's in the rift, which, you know, is this crazy, ever-changing, you know, almost like an energy field. And she is... in a firmer place. She's in an actual location. I don't want to say what it is. But she runs into a lot of different monsters, and she kind of describes them as she goes, and they all sound different and varied and, you know, crazy. They sound, you know, really colorful and vivid. But I liked the one... I think it was described as, like, a bird-like creature. It was almost dragon-y. It was really big. It was toward the end. Some of them were, like, super, super old and
yeah.
seemed like they were revered by the others, by the younger ones. And, like, I just really loved the whole idea of these creatures having their own hierarchy and dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed her witnessing that and being, like, party to that, and I just thought that was really cool. Okay, so I think now we can't really talk much more mm-hmm. without hitting a few spoilers. So yeah. consider this your spoiler warning.
Spoiler section.
Do not listen further if you want to read this book unspoiled. Okay.
Yes.
My first thing is, how cool was La Llorona's palace?
That's one of the things that really, like, stands out to me in this book. And for a second, I couldn't remember if they saw it in the first or second one. And I was like, oh, no, do I not get to talk about it? And then I remembered what was going on. But,
yeah,
it's really kind of beautiful and terrifying at the same time.
Absolutely. The glass floors that change color as you step on them and also absorb your energy and your life force.
That's when they were going up the stairs, right?
Right, where Ondina is kind of, like, prodding them forward, and they're finding it harder and harder to keep trudging up these stairs. And then later on, Paola's walking on very similar or the same floors, and nothing's happening. And you're like, wait, what? And, yeah, I just... The whole palace, every time she enters a new portion of it, every time, you know, Paola wakes up in a new cell, because I feel like she wakes up in cells like five times in this story, it's totally different. And I really liked visualizing this palace and trying to see how, you know, all the glass flooring, and I feel like the walls would probably be similar, and just how colorful it is with it being La Llorona's palace is kind of really interesting and cool, and also kind of terrifying, because you're like, why does she want it to look like this?
Yeah.
And I mean, you can only think it's because of the water and her connection to the water and all of that, but, like, at the same time, the water is where she lost her children, so, like, why would you want it to look like that? You know, there's a lot of questions when
she's
it comes to
not exactly the most stable person.
No.
So.
I think that's definitely fair.
Yeah.
So we should probably talk about the lady, the myth, the legend.
Yeah.
La Llorona. The first thing that kind of came to my mind is what we read in the story that Franco, who is one of the former leaders of the Niños, is believed to have died, basically, by Marissa and all of them. He underestimated La Llorona. When Paola first kind of put the pieces together and thought that La Llorona could be the general... Marissa laughs at her.
Yeah.
And Marissa was laughing at me. Because I thought it was La Llorona as well.
Okay.
Like, obviously we
were personally attacked.
Yes. I was personally attacked by Marissa. And I was very mad at her. Because I was like, how dare you laugh? This, you know, this book is about La Llorona. And we haven't really met La Llorona. And she has to be the general. And what are you talking about? But Marissa just laughs it off. And they're like, Franco, you know, did away with La Llorona a long time ago.
Yeah.
She was a really weak woman who was just wailing about her children. Like, we got rid of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really upset. I was like, La Llorona, like, there's a really, really scary horror movie that they made called La Llorona a couple years ago, and I cannot watch it, will not watch it. The trailer freaked me out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you cannot tell me that that woman was nothing.
Yeah. I think that was a really good twist, though, like, saying that she had already been defeated, but then, you know, basically having her come back, so.
Yeah, as I put in the notes here, Franco underestimated her, because he thought he had kind of dispatched her, sent her, you know, dying into the rift, and she entered the rift, found an orb, and became the general, which is just, what she becomes... After being this wailing woman who's just, you know, in misery over losing her children, the actual powerful creature she became is insane. Like, it's just, she's so powerful, it's crazy. I didn't imagine that she would be quite as nasty as she was to Pau. This is my first real idea of what the La Llorona story was. I knew the name prior to this book. And again, I knew of the horror movie. But I didn't even watch the trailer as much as I possibly could avoid it. So I really didn't know more about her than what Paola's told me. And so getting into actually meeting La Llorona in the story and her, like, having basically one of her sons died trying to resurrect him, which broke, you know, I would have thought that that would have been more effective to her. Like, it would have really changed her. But no, it just made her more driven to try and save her daughter.
Yeah.
And the other son, who she won't speak of because he refused to go through it. Like, it just, I would have thought she would have been more devoted to all of her children than just the one who will go with what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stood out.
Because you hear the story of how she was so, like, aggrieved by her children's deaths that you expect her to be this perfect mother who, but, like, no.
Kind of I like mean, Hera.
Yeah, I mean, it's Yeah, and I mean, with La Llorona, like, you do know about her drowning the children and stuff, so obviously she's not, like, perfect by any means, but you do expect her to be a little bit more devoted to all of her children, and then she's kind of nasty.
Like, she doesn't have as much concern for her children. Like, when we first meet, and I say meet her as in hear her voice, she's locking Paola and Andina in a cell together, and it says, I'll be back for you. Like, it sounds like she tells Andina, it won't save you. And I'm like, is she gonna kill Andina? And then we find out that Andina is her daughter, and you're like, she was gonna kill her daughter? Like, wait, what are you talking about? Yeah. So it's all, she's not the character I expected her to be, but she is definitely a worthy villain for the first book.
I agree.
Just, you know, the whole story of it and how Paola's mother feels about La Llorona and the Gila and all of that. Like, it's a lot of legend to kind of keep in mind throughout the book, and to then finally get to La Llorona and see what she's become because of the power she's found and all of that. She's a very worthy villain. Okay, I think that pretty much hits all of the high points for La Llorona. I also really wanted to talk about Carmela Mata.
Yeah.
She is not just Dante's abuela, and is not just the owner of the Xancla. She is a former leader of the Niños de la Luz, which we haven't talked a lot about yet, but it's the group of children that Marisa's leading, and that Naomi is kind of Marisa's, like, second or third in command. Like, she's, you know, a very powerful fighter and all of that. To know that Carmela was once the Marisa, basically, is so interesting to me. I'm curious if, like, Franco knew Carmela, or, like, what she looked like back then. Like, I'm very curious about how time works once you leave.
Right.
Like, has she continued to age? You know, Paola spent maybe 3 days or something, you know, 4 or 5 days maybe, in the desert. And, like, obviously it didn't affect her physically very much at all. But we've seen that, like, Marisa has been there a year, 2 years, 3 years, and she doesn't seem to have changed either. So I'm curious if Abuela left there and then began to age, or whether some sort of, like, catch-up thing happens too. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do find that fascinating.
That's why I think that Abuela is such an interesting character, because you learn so much more about her and you go, okay, you've experienced a lot of things. You've done a lot of things in your life. Maybe Pau and Dante should be, like, listening to you a little more closely.
Yeah. And it also explains why she was supportive of Paula's decision to go find Emma.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, Paula was saying, like, Dante, do you want to just sit here? Like, or do you want to, you know, go find her? And he's like, are you crazy? Like, what are we, you know, you want to go to these places we've been told to stay away from all of our lives. And then Abuela turns the corner and says, I think she's on the right track.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, wait, what? Because this is the stern grandmother who has been, you know, stopping Dante from doing crazy things or whatever his whole life. So it just seems so out of character. And by the end of the book, you kind of realize why it's absolutely 100% in character for her. And why she knew what to give him, the Xancla and the Florida water and all of that. Like, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know, do we want to talk more about the Niños de la Luz? I mean, there's not a lot going on in this book with them. They're just the group of children who are fighting the monsters that come for them, basically. Yeah,
pretty much. It's an interesting concept, but I think you get a little bit more of who they are in the second book.
Okay, I was kind of hoping so. We got very bare-bones information. Marisa didn't want to share with Paola too much, which I get, because Paula's just a tourist.
Yeah.
Describes it. So, like, I can understand that it's hard to really get a stronger picture of what the Niños are, but you do get a pretty good picture with Sal and Naomi and Marisa. You kind of see a little bit of what everyone's jobs are and what they're doing. And the only thing about them that really kind of flummoxed me is that Marisa said that they weren't dead, but that they exist on this plane. But they also don't quite seem to be as, I don't know, in my brain, they didn't feel as alive as Paola.
Yeah.
So I had some trouble kind of making sense of all of that, and I'm glad to know that we learn more about them, so I'm hoping that'll kind of more solidify what they are for me.
I mean, because they essentially live in limbo, so it's, you know, they're not dead. They haven't, like, actually died because their physical form is still there, but it's not like they're aging. It's right. Not, and they have, like, you know, interesting, I don't know. Do they have abilities?
I don't think we've come across anything. Okay. We saw what Marisa did to become the leader.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think it was an ability, but I feel like if anyone human in the real world tried it, they would die.
The physical, like,
limitations are kind of weird.
Yeah, they're different.
Yeah. So I'm definitely intrigued to learn more about the Niños, and I'm glad to learn that they do reappear, that it's not just kind of a one-off thing. So yeah, I'll kind of leave that for the future when hopefully we'll be talking about the other Paolo books. But yeah, honestly, I really enjoyed the book. I enjoyed all of the lore and the legends and kind of seeing how Taylor brought them to life. And I can see why something like this would feel really, like, personal and special to her.
Yeah.
I think she did a great job with it, and I'm glad I got to kind of experience a lot of things that I don't have very much experience with.
Yeah.
This is not a mythology that I know very well at all. Mm-hmm. So I was really experiencing a lot of it for the first time, and I feel like I had a really good first experience with it. So.
Yeah. And I think the later books too, like just seeing Pau explore this and coming to terms with all of it was, she's kind of this person, she can't speak Spanish, right?
Right.
Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes.
So, like, her connection to her culture and even her language isn't as strong as some other people's, and I feel like she has to learn a lot along the way because of that, and I really appreciated that. And there's stuff in the third book that I, like, personally connected to a lot, and I think is really interesting. So if and when we do actually get to that, it's going to be, I think, a really cool conversation. So
absolutely.
I think if you liked the first book, you're going to like the other two books. Like, they're just as good. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I read this book, and I'm really looking forward to talking to Taylor.
Yeah.
Which will be coming next for you.
Yeah. So
enjoy this podcast.
Have a good time.
Enjoy.
Today we're talking to Taylor K. Mejia, author of Paola Santiago and the Sanctuary of Shadows, the third and final book in the Paola Santiago series. It hit store shelves on August 2nd, and Taylor has agreed to let us ask her some questions today. Now, due to Taylor's very busy schedule, we had to get a little creative with this interview, but we hope you enjoy it. And as usual, we split our questions up into different sections, and I'm going to let Kristen kick us off with the first set.
Okay, so first we have, do you have any go-to snacks when you're writing?
Pink Starbursts, of course.
What editing critique or comment do you most dread seeing after a first draft?
I work really hard on my character motivations, so I think the one I hate the most is, like, oh, I don't think that character would do that, especially because sometimes, I mean, pretty often, my editor, Steph Lurie, is right about that, but it, because it's something I put so much thought and care into, I feel like it's definitely the hardest to hear.
You've mentioned how writing this series has deepened your connection to your culture's folktales. Can you talk a little bit more about that experience?
In terms of writing, deepening my connection with my culture's folktales, yeah. I like to say that I was motivated to write this story by the extreme terror of hearing a lot of these folktales in my childhood. But of course, I feel like every family has kind of like their go-to stories that are like, oh, we always tell this scary story, or like, this is one that like someone in the family actually saw evidence of, so we repeat that one over and over. But as I was getting into it and kind of trying to like represent more sort of stories than just the few I had heard growing up over and over, I found that like every family sort of has their few, and like the ones that overlap, it's really fun. But there were so many that I didn't know, so it was fun talking to like cousins and like other friends that are Mexican American and being like, oh, what were the ones that scared you, and finding out that like we all have sort of a common core of hearing these stories, but everyone sort of had a different version, and it really felt like it was bringing me closer to my community to sort of like figure out how everybody's experience of hearing these stories had differed.
Did you have the idea for the Paola series long before Rick Riordan Presents came along, or was the RRP opportunity what bore the idea for Paola?
I had the idea for a series about Paola. She didn't have a name yet, but about a girl who was dealing with a La Llorona sighting, it was kind of just like a little inkling I had. At the time when we found out about the Rick Riordan Presents imprint, I had only written YA before, and I really was imagining this as a middle grade story. So when I found out, I heard the announcement about the Rick Riordan Presents imprint and Roshni Chachki writing Arusha and the End of Time, and I was like, oh, this might be such a good fit for the idea. So I had like a little skeleton of an idea, but definitely not anything fully fleshed. And then when I heard about the imprint, I was really inspired, and so it gave me kind of like a little bit of an inspiration framework to work from.
Are any of the characters in the series based on people from your life? Did you draw from personalities and individuals in reality for any of them?
I think a lot of my characters have bits of me in them or bits of people I know in them. And I always start out thinking, oh, this character is going to be just like this person, or this character is going to be just like me. And then kind of as the engine of the story gets rolling, the character makes decisions and they interact in this world that I've never been in and the people that I know haven't been in, and so they kind of start to take on a personality of their own. Like, I'll be like, oh, what would this person do in this situation, but it's not what the character would do. And so yeah, I think they start out maybe being inspired by someone, but as they go, they really develop their own personalities, which is something I really love about writing.
So a lot of the monsters and legendary figures in these books are pretty scary. What was your process for deciding what was spooky enough without causing your readers to have nightmares?
Okay, so the monsters and the scary stuff, my process for deciding what was spooky enough to include and what would give readers nightmares, I'm probably more of a chicken than your typical 9 to 12 year old reader. So I had kind of a built-in gauge for that, because I was like, okay, if I can think about it at night and still go to sleep, then it should be okay for a fourth grader. So I guess I'm lucky to be just an utter scaredy cat in that regard. I have a kid at home who was 6 when I started writing these stories and is now almost 10, and so sometimes I would ask them like, oh, is this too scary, because I thought it was terrifying, and they would be like, what, that's not scary at all. So I both had a gauge for my story and learned that I am more of a scaredy cat than my elementary school age child.
Do you have any scenes that hit the cutting room floor, or any monsters or legends you wish you could have included but didn't have time for? And would you ever use those for a new series?
There are so many legends that it would have been super fun to include. I really encourage anyone who gets to the end of this series and is like, more Mexican folklore monsters, to do some research of their own and find out, because there are really some incredible ones, and there are all kinds of cool monsters from across Latin American folklore that sort of interact. Like, if you think you know everything about La Llorona, look up how she shows up in different cultures, mythologies. Like, there's a wealth of stuff to look into. I've barely scratched the surface of kind of like some of the heavy hitters here, but like, there is so much more to learn. I would happily do like 10 more book series about cultural mythology from Mexico and the border.
I saw that having a character quiz was on your bucket list as an author, and that you ended up with Naomi. What aspects of your personality do you share most with her? In what ways are you different? By the way, Kristen was Emma and I was Paola.
Yeah, having a character quiz was definitely on my bucket list, and I was really thrilled to end up with Naomi. I think Naomi is maybe a little more like me now than she is like I was as a kid. She's sort of like a no-nonsense, like tough-talking, kind of get-to-the-heart-of-the-matter type of person, which I hope I am, but she also sort of uses like this aura of being cool and intimidating to kind of mask what's really some squishy squishy big feelings on the inside. So definitely as a teenager, that is more what I was like, trying to seem cool and kind of putting off this veneer of like untouchability and like, oh, I'm mean and intimidating, and so you can't, you know, get close enough to notice that I'm definitely just all full of feelings on the inside. Oh, and I love to hear that. Okay, so Karen got Paola and Kristen got Emma. Actually, a couple of good friends of mine got Emma, and my kid also got Emma, so I'm like surrounded by Emmas, which is wonderful. I love Emma.
If you came face to face with El Cucuy, what are some of the nightmares he would show you?
I think this is probably too personal a question. I think our fears are probably some of our most protected secrets. I don't know if I want to put out there what I'm most afraid of. What if people just jump out and scare me with like a giant spider? Oh no, now I've admitted it.
Now that the series has concluded, is there one moment across all three books that you come back to as the sort of epitome of Paola Santiago, either as the character or the trilogy?
I'm trying to think. I feel like there's a few moments in the first book that are just like, oh yeah, that's so Pow. That's so this story. Like, I guess maybe one of the moments I come back to is Pow and Dante in the liminal space cactus field for the first time. And they keep ending up at the same spot over and over, no matter which direction they go. And Pow's little science brain is just breaking because she can't understand how this is possible. And then she turns on the flashlight and the light beam bends and she's like laughing, just cracking up, like hysterical laughing, going, even physics isn't real. And I feel like that was such a moment that really showed Pow. And then here's Dante being like, it's fine, just who cares about physics, let's try to move on. She's just so desperate to save her best friend, and she has so relied on these rules that shape her world, and just that moment of everything crumbling and her just laughing is one of my favorite moments. I like to think she grows and changes a whole lot over the course of the book. So some of the moments with like the most realized, like mature Pow towards the end of the books, where even towards the end she's not super mature, she's still Pow, but I think those early moments where she's still kind of coming to terms with what this new world is are some of my most favorite quintessential Pow.
Okay, now for some fun stuff. If you could choose your godly parent from Greek mythology, who would it be?
I know this isn't technically possible, but I feel like I've always been an Artemis. Pretty much every quiz that I've ever taken in the Riordan verse, the Percy verse, has always said Artemis, and it's like, we know this isn't technically possible. Like, her cabin at Camp Half-Blood is empty, but I think the empty cabin really might suit me.
What's the best book you've read lately?
The best book I've read lately? Ugh, this is so tough. I'm actually revisiting some Tamora Pierce books, so I'm reading Alana the First Adventure, and it's been really fun. It's been so long that I barely even remember the characters' names, and I'm just like really enjoying like revisiting that part of my childhood where I was like, oh, these are the best books in the world, and also getting to read them along with my kid who is now going into fourth grade, so we're reading together, and that's been a really special experience. Gosh, there are so many other good books right now. I'm currently reading Hummingbird by Natalie Lloyd. I was lucky enough to do an event with her at Books of Wonder with a couple of other awesome authors, so I'm really excited about that one. Yeah, there's some great, great, great books out right now.
And now on to our final questions. We saw that Paola Santiago is getting an adaptation. How does that feel?
Oh yeah, Paola Santiago is getting a TV adaptation, which, how does it make me feel? It's honestly the most surreal possible thing. Like, there are times when I get, you know, like a script sent to me to read, or people start talking about, you know, which actors we might like to see, and we're still very, very far off from casting or anything like that yet, but just being able to watch the series develop. I'm not writing for it, so I'm a little bit on the periphery, so I feel like almost like being a fan of my own thing from the outside is really very fun, because the writers who are involved are all super, super talented, and so the story is like growing so much above and beyond and past and in different directions, and you know, back over the things that I wrote in the books, and TV is such a different format, so you really get a chance to explore other characters as deeply as the main character. You're not sort of, like, fixed to this one point of view. So, yeah, I've really been having an interesting time kind of giving over the reins to a group of incredibly talented people, but also they're not me. And I feel like normally writing is such a solitary thing for me. It's just me and the blank page in the room alone making all the decisions and having all the control. So it has been a really interesting experience to kind of step back and let go and see what these other brilliant writers come up with and, like, let them explore the world without feeling too proprietary about every single thing that happens. So yeah, it's been a personal growth exercise. I'm very, very lucky to be able to really trust the people who are working on it and be getting regular updates and all that stuff. But yeah, it is definitely an interesting experience, much more collaborative and less controlled than most of my experiments in writing so far. So yeah, it's been very interesting. I'm really excited to one day just get to turn on my TV and see the story play out.
What are some of your other projects coming up that you'd like to let people know about?
So many. I have so many. For sort of older readers, I have a new YA fantasy series coming out in March. It's the first book is called Lucha of the Night Forest, and it's definitely for older teens. It's definitely got some pretty intense themes, so I would stay away from it if you are very young. Maybe wait until, I think the publisher's recommendation is 14 and up, so I would say, yeah, 13, 14 is probably the earliest, I would say. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there that's really important to me. There's some mother-daughter drama, there's some sisters, and yeah, it's a book that takes place at the edge of an ancient and mysterious forest. So ancient forests are definitely one of my favorite things in this world, so you'll see a lot of that. And then for my middle grade readers, in 2024, I have my next middle grade, which is called It Happened to Anna. And it's a very different story than the POW stories in a lot of ways. It's a little bit quieter. It's not so much big action-y monster fights and stuff. It's a little more personal, but it is definitely still very scary. It's about a girl named Sadie whose best friend died. She's starting at a new school, and she's being haunted by a very vengeful ghost who she can't see, who does not want her to ever make a friend, until she does make a friend, and it sort of starts to loosen the ghost's hold on her and make her wonder what really did happen to her best friend. So, a little bit spooky. And then I do, of course, because this is book publishing, I have a few projects in the works right now that I'm very excited to talk about soon, but that I have not been cleared to announce, so.
What else is on your author bucket list that you'd like to accomplish?
You know, what's so weird is that I started in this industry, oh no, almost six years ago, and I have achieved so many of my bucket list things that it's really hard to even say. And it's it's funny because there were things when I first started publishing books that I was so sure, like, these are the things that will make my career feel real, and a lot of them have happened and they didn't really feel like much. Like, it was like, oh yeah, okay, like, some things have happened, some things haven't, but there have been small things that I didn't even think to put on the list that are the things that really made things feel real. Like, the first time someone came up to me at an event and said, you know, this book has been really important to me, it helped me learn this about myself, like, moments like that, I don't think I'll ever get enough of. Obviously, seeing the TV adaptation actually come to fruition would be, like, a huge one, so I'm hoping that will happen soon. Before this, I would say I was gonna say finishing a series, having a whole series out in the world, which I now do, a whole trilogy. So I really hope that you guys enjoy the end of this series, and yeah, thank you so much for having me and for being on the ride. It's it's been wild. It's been wild, and in a lot of ways, it's just starting. So thank you so much.
All right, that wraps up our interview with Taylor. I think we got some really cool answers, and it was a lot of fun, and I just have really enjoyed, you know, being all wrapped up in Paola, and the fact that it's over is kind of sad, but at the same time, it's really nice to have the complete series, and you know, it'll always be there to exist for us.
So. And for me, I'm really glad to have been introduced to it.
Yeah.
And to get to experience some of this. And yeah. I look forward to reading the next two books.
Yeah, we'll get to that sometime in the future. Who knows?
Yep, it's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts. If you like revisiting your favorite canceled and cult classic shows, consider tuning in to Rewatchable, which has covered series like Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, and Angel, and many more. Most recently, we've also discussed all four Matrix movies. We also have Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that features our biggest hypes and gripes in fandom and life, and we even post interviews with our favorite creators. And lastly, we also have Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which has previously discussed every episode of the show, conducted many interviews with the cast and crew, and will be covering the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. If you've got long form thoughts or a lot to say, feel free to email us. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help others to find us, so that would be a great help. You can leave us questions and comments or ideas for content you might want to see in any of these places. Today, we have an email we wanted to read. I will throw this back to Karen.
Okay, thank you. Yes, so we have another email from Cuiva, our friend in Ireland. And it was a really sweet email, as it normally is. And she says, "My friend Emer and I, we first bonded over the podcast. Look forward to every Monday where it comes out where we are for the new episode." Thank you so much. That's so nice.
Yay.
"I was listening to the merch episode a while ago and wanted to say for my birthday, my best friend bought me probably one of my favorite things I've gotten as a gift. And it was a navy Yankees cap just like Annabeth's. And I love it."
Aww.
That's super cute.
That's so cute.
I'm from New York. Not the city, but I'm from New York and I don't even have a Yankees cap. I mean, because I don't really care about sports, but maybe I should get one just because.
I was gonna say, I am not a Yankees fan.
Yeah.
But if I ever owned a Yankees cap, it would be because of Annabeth.
Yeah, pretty much. "I wanted to share one of my favorite myths, and I'm gonna try to pronounce these correctly, so I apologize in advance. It's called Tir na n'Og. In English, it's called the Land of Young. I would put it in here, but it's too long. I would recommend looking it up. I'll have the correct spelling in the show notes in case anybody wants to look it up. Also, one called Shadanda." Oh, I hope that was right, because it does not look like that in writing, but I Googled it, and I hope that's correct. "But it is a bit gory and sad, I guess. Right up my alley. There are so many cool Irish myths, and I have a whole book of them in my room. It would be a cool episode to do different myths from different mythologies and cultures. We definitely want to do this, especially once we get into the Cain Chronicles and to Magnus Chase, and of course, if Ricky's going to do his Irish mythology."
Well, I was just thinking, yeah. I'm like, okay, there might be an episode there where we kind of look into some Irish mythology and see what Rick, you know, maybe if we can kind of predict what Rick might use.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
We should totally do that. That would be really cool.
Thanks for the idea.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I really, really mean that. She also asked a question. "How did you two first meet?"
Aww.
Do you want to tell the story?
Oh, boy. Do you mean meet in person or meet online?
I think for both. It's got to be both for
well,
us.
Well, what if I tell meeting online and you give the... It wasn't like a specific, like, we met in person thing, but we did meet in person for a first time at one point, too.
Yeah, so that's true.
I'm going to take that one. Well, because... We both were writing for Hyperbole. Karen was an editor at first, and doing some writing, I believe.
I think so, because I think I started off writing about Teen Wolf pretty early on.
Yeah, and then you covered Percy not far long after that. So we were both writing for Hyperbole, and we kind of, you know, brushed up against each other online a little bit because of our coverage and stuff like that.
You were a features writer, so you were kind of doing different work than
right.
I was.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, it might have been when you guys did that giant Teen Wolf
annual retrospective thing. Mm. When you, like, started putting together all those articles, I might have started writing some Teen Wolf stuff then.
Yeah.
But not too far along, Karen and I started chatting about something, and pretty soon it evolved into us watching TV shows together and talking to each other as we watched them. I believe we did some episodes of Arrow.
Oh, we did. That's what really solidified our friendship.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I was pretty sure Arrow was the first one.
Yeah, because you had already seen it at that point, and like, I was catching up, so I would, like, live message you all of my feelings, and we really bonded over that.
Yes, but then I introduced you to The Following, and I feel like that's where we truly cemented our friendship, because I made her feel bad for serial killers. And it was a lot of fun, and then after that, it kind of snowballed very quickly.
Yeah.
I'll let Karen tell the story of our first meeting, which then wound up with us living together.
Yeah, so we ended up going to Comic-Con together, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so was that, like, in 2015?
Well, yeah, because the first... Okay, we hung out together almost all day at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Just kind of by happenstance. It happened to be my slow day, and I think you had a lot of stuff, so I kind of tagged along.
And there were, like, a lot of other hypeable people there, and I was there with, like, Natalie, who I was very close to and stuff, but I think, like...
Well, Mikal was staying with her friend.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be alone in my room, so Kristen came and slept in my room with me.
I didn't really know her.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was, again, another moment where we kind
of... Yeah. There's just, like, these hallmark moments where it's like, you know, okay, this is kind of where things got started. And then I tricked her into moving to North Carolina with me, which did not work out. And then she was like, nope, I'm done with this, which I did not, you know.
And then I dragged Karen back to my hometown.
Yeah.
AKA Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah. And we've been rooming together for like 7 or 8 years at this point. Yep. So soon to be ending.
It's been a long haul. But, we'll just have to figure out the next evolution of it once.
Yeah.
Once we're no longer living together, but still in the same city.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. And probably not living all that far away. I would imagine we're going to be living, like, maybe 10 minutes away from each other.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Karen knows where she's moving. I don't know where I'm moving.
We'll figure it out. But, I mean, I think that we've done so much stuff together and, like, a lot of pop culture-y things. You know, we went and saw, like, Civil War together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot of moments where, like, we got to share a lot of experiences together. So it's been, I feel like it's been a nice ride, like it's over.
I was going to say, at some point, we'll probably end up talking more about North Carolina because it will probably come up at some point.
Yeah.
But
that was a whole experience.
I was going to say, that was a bit of a forging of a friendship.
Yes, that's true.
What we endured there.
And honestly, so thankful that it didn't break the friendship.
Right.
Because that kind of situation could have, but it ended up being even better, and now we're here, so...
For sure.
That's really cool. So,
thanks for asking.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I always tell people, like, Kristen and I are doing this podcast. I think we have good chemistry, because we've just known each other for so long at this point, so...
And we like a lot of similar things. Like, she definitely likes more scary stuff than I do. and I kind of fall a little deeper into film, I think, than you kind of do. I mean, you watch some of the... Like,
you definitely know a lot more about that than I do, but...
I pretend.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it.
We have a lot in common, so I think that, you know, we always got a lot to say to each other.
Agreed.
Quiva also says, when I was listening to the cosplay episode and I immediately thought it would be cool if my friend Emer could draw it, and then you guys said it. She gets all the credit for her amazing work. Pictures at the bottom. And we looked at the pictures, and they are... Amazing.
They're so cool.
I, like, really, really like them.
She did, like, different poses and stuff.
And like, a lot of... I was expecting, like, one or two. She did, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. She did all of the characters.
Oh, wow.
And she chose which cosplays to put them in. So, I really, really liked it. And then, I know this email was a bit jam-packed, but I had so much I wanted to say. Thanks so much for your amazing podcast from Quiva and Emer. And thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, I always appreciate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so thank you again, Quiva. That was amazing, and we love hearing from you. Next week is Percy Jackson's birthday.
Yeah, August 18th, so that's very exciting.
And we're planning on discussing a couple of short stories that kind of fall between the series. So it's Percy Jackson and the Bronze Dragon and Percy Jackson and the Sword of Hades, both of which are available in the Demigod Files.
Yes.
Which you can probably find at your local library. It's an older book. It's been around for a while.
Yeah, so there's probably going to be a ton of copies.
Right. So you can hopefully find it in the form you're looking for, ebook, probably physical book if you wanted to check at your library. I think it's also an audiobook. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I found the audiobook.
Probably. I wouldn't be too surprised.
So make sure to check that out if you want to read them before the next podcast. But yeah, we're really excited to celebrate Percy's birthday. until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.